Chariot Solutions TechCast, episode number 85, a pre-Philly Emerging Tech interview with keynoter Tom Igo on physical computing. The TechCast is sponsored by Chariot Solutions. For consulting, mentoring, and training in Scala, Java 8, Spring, JavaScript frameworks like Angular, and more, check us out. Our website is chariotsolutions.com. There you can find blogs, podcasts, and screencasts, as well as our services. On the show today, Philly ETE keynoter on day one, Tom Igo. He is an associate arts professor at NYU in their interactive telecommunications program, and he talks to us about physical computing and on the Arduino, a board that he was instrumental in getting founded back in 2005. We discuss all sorts of things around his work at the ITP. We also talk about the Arduino itself and how it's created and how to interact with hardware using these small devices. Hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, well, Tom Igo, welcome to the Chariot TechCast.
Thank you for having me.
Tom is a keynoter for ETE. He's going to be speaking on the first day of the conference on April 7th, and he's talking about physical computing. If you don't know who Tom is, he is a member of the New York University staff. He's associate arts professor at the Interactive Telecommunications Program. Tom, can you tell us a little bit about that program and how you're involved?
Sure. So I'm an associate arts professor at ITP, as you mentioned, and we're a two-year graduate program in the Tisch School of the Arts at NYU. And we basically take people from a whole variety of different disciplines and we give them hands-on introduction to the production of digital interactive technologies. We were founded in 1979 by a woman named Red Burns, and her whole goal was to say that, you know, there are plenty of technologies that affect people's everyday lives. She started with the Portapak camera, but nowadays there's all kinds of things going on. And people don't necessarily understand those things because in the past, a lot of our approach to technology development has been very much one of let the technologists do it and they'll just hand you whatever things are. But we're at a stage now where that really is not acceptable because things affect so much of our lives that we really should have an understanding of them and be literate in them. What we try to do at ITP with the students we've got, we take about 110 per year, so there's, you know, 220 at any given time, is get them to understand what these things are by building them. So we teach them programming, we teach them electronics, we teach them media production, we teach them all of this wrapped up in a lot of discussion around how it affects everyday life. And we deliberately look for people who don't have a technology background. People come from all kinds of different backgrounds. And we find that the different disciplines actually really makes a difference. A large part of the challenge for folks is learning how to communicate with others who don't share their assumptions.
Right. And I mean, now you can go in a lot of different places and buy these small devices. You actually are one of the founders of something called an Arduino board. And it's one of these things that you can buy off the shelf, you know, buy some electronic equipment, wire it together and make things happen, program them from your computer. And from what I understand, you use that in your courses to a degree, too. Can you give us an idea of what the Arduino is?
Sure. So a little bit of background. What I teach at ITP is called physical computing, and it's introducing people to the idea that a computer is more than just the keyboard, mouse, and screen that we see every day, and that our means of communicating with it is through our physical bodies, and furthermore, through its senses, the input sensors it's got, the keys, the mouse, XY movement, the camera, and so forth, are the way it sees us. And if we want to be able to physically express ourselves through computers to each other, we need a wider range of sensing for those computers. So in physical computing, we teach people this by teaching them to program a very small computer called a microcontroller. It's the same thing that's in your microwave oven or in your stove or in your, you know, water heater, all these things nowadays. And Arduino is an example of that. Arduino is about a $35 board. And like I said, it's a computer, but it has no physical interface except for a bunch of pins where you wire in sensors and so forth. It's also a programming environment that we wrote to make it simple to get started with microcontrollers. And it's also a set of instructions and tutorials that we built along with the community as it grew to really make people understand what's possible with microcontrollers.
So with that, what kind of programming language is it, you know, Java or something like that, or is it more low level?
Arduino is programmed in C, But what we tried to do with it was we built an API for it that is a little higher level than typical microcontroller C. Most microcontrollers are programmed either in assembly or in a very low-level, terse version of C where you're really manipulating the memory registers directly. What we tried to do was put a layer of abstraction on top of that that would make it simpler for everyday people to understand. So the programming language has more verbose names for functions, things like digital write instead of, you know, get or set. And we tried to use variable names that meant something. And we also tried to make it possible to not have to delve into memory management as much as possible so that people could really get started without having to know everything about C before they started making things happen.
And if you're programming that kind of language in C with this helper library and methods, you're really kind of at a real-time level, right? I know that most programmers, if you're coming from the programming end, are working in environments with, you know, garbage collection and not real-time. And I assume that's critical for things like this, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're dealing with the physical world, whether you're controlling motors or reading sensors, you need to be able to deal at times much faster often than we usually deal with computers. You know, if your motor is off by, you know, a couple of microseconds, you could throw off the whole thing. So we don't have an operating system on Arduino at all. The code you're writing, and this is the case with most microcontrollers, the code you're writing is the only program running on the chip. And so when you turn the chip off, program stops. When you turn it on, the program starts, and that's it. There's a lot of other tools out there now, like the Raspberry Pi or the BeagleBone Black or even our own Arduino Uno, which have a separate operating system on there, and that's great, but the operating system, as you mentioned, doesn't run in real time. So the other reason for doing this, not just because of real time, was that, frankly, for beginning programmers, having to understand an operating system and all of its various pieces is a lot of work. So if you can start them with just understanding a program and the program being the only thing running on that computer, it's actually simpler.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I mean, just getting up to speed in a language, you have to learn a lot about the platform and, you know, the build tools and everything else. And if you simplify it down to just that, it's, I guess, less to chew to a degree.
Exactly. What we tried to do with Arduino was really make it so that you write a few lines of code, you press an upload button that uploads the code to your chip, and it starts running right away. You don't think about the build tools. You don't think about the tool chain. You don't think about any of those details, because once you've set those in place, they're standard.
Now, how was Arduino born? I know you're part of the founding of it. What was the process that made this into something where we can just go buy one off the shelf today?
Sure. Well, you know, to give you a little background, at ITP, as I mentioned, I was teaching physical computing, and we were using all kinds of different microcontrollers. There weren't any that were really written well for beginners. So I had ended up having to write a lot of tutorials and a lot of examples to get, you know, my students any material. I was putting that on the web. And the Interaction Design Institute in Ivrea, founded in 2001, and they were also teaching physical computing, and they were really teaching off of my notes. So Massimo Bonzi and Casey Reese, who was teaching there, and Bill Verplank, who was teaching there, we were talking back and forth a lot because they were also teaching designers and artists and so forth, like I was at ITP. And, you know, we all kept saying, okay, it's great that we have these notes on how to simplify using some of these tools, but wouldn't it be great if there was a microcontroller environment that was as simple as, say, the processing environment that Casey had written, Casey with Ben Fry, to simplify Java for designers? Wouldn't it be great if there was a hardware equivalent of that? So the folks at Ivrea started working on that. They made a few early prototypes. They made something called Programa 2003. And then with Hernando Barragan, who was a student there, they made wiring. And then eventually they made Arduino. I had been in touch with them as they were working on all these things because we were always trading tips and tricks. And they invited me over for a workshop in 2005. And in that workshop, we were designing prototypes for a lighting company, and we used Arduinos to do it. And in using it, I said, this is really great. Not only is this simple, it's also at a price point I can imagine using with my students, because they were able to make the boards where even with a little bit of profit, they were going to be able to sell them at about $35, which was unheard of at the time. The basic stamp, which was the simplest thing at the time, was $50. And I said, you know, if you guys start making these things, I would certainly use it in class. And a couple weeks later, they contacted me and said, we're going to start making these things. We want to make a company. Do you want to join us? And that's how I came on board. And a lot of my early work really was around writing tutorials and examples and so forth and helping to advise on keeping the API human friendly.
Right, which it needs to be for people to start hacking and making projects with it. And as you mentioned, you bring a lot of people from different disciplines in. So you're not just looking to basically create new startups, right? That's not your goal in the ITP, right? It's more of a hardware literacy. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a perfect term for it, yeah. Because we don't necessarily want to turn people into engineers. We want to turn people into people who understand how technology that affects their lives works. You know, if you think about literacy, we are all users of language, but we're not all professional users of language. So if somebody hits you with Strunk and White every time you dangled a participle or split an infinitive, you know, you would stop using language. So when an engineer hits you with Horowitz and Hill every time you use the wrong resistor, you're not going to use resistors. So our goal was to say, let's treat technology the same way we treat language, as a literacy.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, it is important because, you know, there are so many people that use, for example, word processing, but 25, 30 years ago, no one would. And now you see people starting to get 3D printers and starting to share models and things like that. And slowly we're getting more power over the hardware around us, which I think is just very interesting. In terms of like applications for this kind of stuff, what have you seen some of your students come out with?
Well, a whole lot of things. I mean, there's sort of three broad categories I see them fall into. They tend to be either expressive works, like works of art and so forth. I've seen people make systems where, you know, you can dance with the computer and the computer can read that. I've seen people build all kinds of interesting interactive artworks where you sing to it or you yell at it or things like that. We tend to see tools that are what I call instructive, where, you know, you would learn something by experiencing a particular thing that you'd learn no other way. I had some students a couple of years ago who built a interface where you would sort of plug various cables in like an old style switchboard, and you would see how the various elements of your eye, the rods and cones, see things. So they'd show you what you were looking at through a video camera, but only as if it was the rods or only as if it was the cones. So these kind of things where you instruct through experience. And I think the third category you see a lot of are instruments, whether they be musical instruments or instruments for expression, or instruments for more utilitarian purposes. We've seen a lot of stuff in the assistive tech space, for example. We had some students build a very simple platform for people who had a stroke so that they could stand on it and see how their balance was shifting as a result of the stroke. And they were able to build this thing in like, you know, 45 minutes because of the tools that we'd given them.
That's amazing. And so where do you see this stuff heading? You know, you think people are going to start programming in higher level languages? You had already mentioned that you're programming in C, but we talked a little bit earlier before this and you had mentioned Python, for example. Is it a reality that people can program if they're not so good at C, they can get something done with something else?
Yeah, that definitely is the case. And we're seeing a lot of other controllers come onto the market that are doing that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned earlier the Spark Core, and the Esperino is one of my current favorites right now. We also mentioned the embedded Linux boards like the BeagleBone Black and the Raspberry Pi. Those are two different classes of things. First, you've got the operating system boards where certainly you can program in JavaScript and Python and so forth, but you don't get the advantage of real time. And then the Esperino and the Spark Core, you're programming them in JavaScript, but there's nothing else on the chip besides the JavaScript engine. So you're getting pretty close to real time. And one of the reasons I love Esperino is that they rewrote the JavaScript engine to make it even more real time, which I think is really impressive.
And when you're programming these things, you know, like, for example, this JavaScript one, what are some of the approaches for doing the actual programming? You had mentioned in the Arduino, you've got kind of a basic IDE and you upload basically firmware, right? Or a small program into the PROM or whatever it is. What kind of programming environments do you see out there now for this?
Well, like you mentioned, you know, the original Arduino one is just an application that runs in on your laptop, right? But we're seeing a lot more browser-based interfaces come out. Again, most of the ones we just talked about are browser-based, where they'll have a browser-based editor, and either they'll put the compilation engine offline and download the compiled file to your chip, or they'll put it, you know, in the browser itself. I think we're going to see more and more of that. Certainly, we're working on similar things like that with Arduino as well, and I think it's a good way to go. What concerns me a little bit is when I see cases where, in order to program the chip, not only do you have to use the browser-based interface, but you have to register the chip with the manufacturer's website. I think that's, to me, a little bit intrusive. I'm fine, you know, opening the web page from your site, because then I know that the page is in my browser locally. But the minute you say to me, every transaction I do, every mistake I make in my code goes to your site, yeah, I'm not so cool with that.
So, Tom, what do you think about resources for people who want to read up on this stuff, you know, either before the conference or afterwards as some research?
Well, there's lots of things online and available. But just to talk about my own resources, all of the material from my classes is online and available publicly. If you go to itp.nyu.edu/physcomp, P-H-Y-S-C-O-M-P, all the lessons from class are there, all the lecture notes, all the tutorials, and a bunch of videos as well. And you can also find those at a lot of other people's sites, companies like sparkfun.com and adafruit.com, in addition to selling some of these modules, also have really great tutorials on how to use them. On Arduino, you can go to arduino.cc, which is our main website, and you can see many of the tutorials we've written there. You can join in the forums and so forth. And then I've got my own personal blog at tygo.net. There's a blog there called Code, Circuits, and Construction, where anything I'm building or any examples I'm working on, I put up there. So those are just a few of many, but really any of the manufacturers or retailers that are selling this stuff. I think we should also mention Make Magazine. Makezine.com has a ton of really great resources as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any good book that's a good introductory electronics book? Or do you think all those tutorials are probably just as good as having a book like that?
Well, there are a few. I mean, I'm biased because I've written a few, right? But Physical Computing, the first one I wrote, I don't use the controllers in there anymore. The material describing the stuff is still pretty good. There's a second one I did called Making Things Talk that tries to introduce not just the basics of microcontrollers, but also the idea that they're going to connect through the internet and through Bluetooth and all these things. Mobanzi's Getting Started with Arduino is I think, the canonical guide to getting started with Arduino. And Matt Richardson, who's now at Raspberry Pi, did Getting Started with Raspberry Pi. He also did one on the BeagleBoard. So there's quite a few books out there for this stuff nowadays.
All right, great. So let's talk a bit about your talk at ETE. What are you going to focus on?
Well, I'm going to focus on a lot of what we've talked about here. I mean, I think we're seeing a real change go on where it used to be the case that we did very little on computers if we weren't, you know, professionals in the field. We might do a little bit of software. We might, customize a spreadsheet or things like that. But we're reaching a point now where this change that we've been talking about with physical computing is affecting everyday life. I don't have to explain it as much to people anymore because things like the Kinect and the Wii exist, right? Between things like that and some of the tools for making physical things like, you know, 3D printers and laser cutters and CNC mills, and some of the services that also make that easy, we're seeing everyday people build things that otherwise they would have had to rely on a mass-produced device for. We're seeing people being able to customize their world both in hardware and software, and that's really interesting to me. So rather than thinking about, you know, connected devices as something that has to come to you from a company, we can now start to think of it as things you can build as solutions for yourself or that you can cobble together from off-the-shelf pieces. So I'm going to try and talk about that and show a few examples of projects that are pointing in that direction.
All right, fantastic. Well, Tom Igo, thank you so much for spending the time with us on the TechCast.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
You'll see him at Philly Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Day 1. He is the opening keynoter. If you want to see other screencasts from years past of ETE, go ahead and visit our website, chariotsolutions.com/screencasts, where you can view screencasts from the last 4 years of Philly Emerging Tech. You can also see presentation PDFs at /presentations or listen to our podcast at /techcast. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.